Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Elle, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi. I'm Kath.
And I'm Elle, and welcome to Bookish Podcast.
Today we're very lucky to be joined by a special guest, Alexandra Potter, the author of Confessions of 40-something Fuck Up and Confessions of a 40-something Fuck Up, amongst other novels. Alexandra, hello.
Hello, thanks for having me on your podcast.
No, thanks very much for joining. Would you like to give a little introduction to yourself and the book that we're going to be discussing today?
Yeah, sure, I'd be delighted. Okay, so my name's Alexandra Potter and I've been writing novels for 25 years now, and I've written 14 novels, and the book that is coming out this week in paperback is called More Confessions of a 40-something. Can I say the F word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, more Confessions of a 40-something Fuck Up, which is kind of part two to Confessions of a 40-something Fuck Up. And it's a book for anyone that's ever looked at their life and thought, this isn't how I imagined it was going to be. And anyone that's ever felt like they've dropped a ball or missed a goal, or everyone's succeeding around them and they're kind of failing in some way. And the whole title of the book is that actually no one is a fuck up. It's just that society can make you feel like one, because there's so much pressure to sort of tick all the boxes and reach all the goals. And what happens if you haven't? And so this book's about a character called Nell. She feels exactly like that. And she just has this sort of messy life and she doesn't recognize it on social media. So she starts an anonymous podcast where she wants to tell it like it is, in case anybody out there listening feels the same way too. And it turns out lots of people feel like her.
Great. That was a lovely description. Couldn't have said it better ourselves. Although I'm sure you've had to do that a few times.
I've had to do it a few times and I'm never really good. I kind of wander around sort of describing what it's about. So I'm trying to sort of get my an elevator pitch. I'm trying to get that better.
Yeah, it is hard though. It's hard. But no, that was a great description. We have both read the book, really liked it. I actually read the first one audiobook to the second, which I don't know if that made a difference to my experience, but I actually really enjoyed both, but surprisingly enjoyed the audiobook more. I'm not really an audiobook person usually, but I had a credit and I was like, oh, I'm going to try it. So actually would recommend it on audiobook as well. So,
because we've got Sally Phillips, who's the amazing actress. She was in Bridget Jones and
oh my god,
Smack the Pony, and yeah, so she does the audio and she's amazing. I went
Didn't
into
even
the
make
recording
that connection.
Booth. Yeah, she's fantastic, and I mean it's kind of a pinch me moment watching her record.
Yeah,
my novel.
I bet. Yeah, well, actually, speaking of Bridget Jones, I think on one of the covers it says like our modern day Bridget Jones,
yes,
or something as a review. Like, how do you feel about that? Did Bridget Jones inspire you at all?
You know, it's kind of the highest compliment I think anybody can pay me, because I never thought about Bridget Jones when I was writing the book until the journalist from The Telegraph said it's like the new modern day Bridget Jones. But I remember reading Helen Fielding's book back in my late 20s, and it was kind of a revelation for me, because I read this amazing, funny, real book and I recognized part of my life in there, and I hadn't really felt like that before with books. And then from that book I then went on to write my own novel, you know, probably a year or 18 months later. And I think it's kind of, you know, from that novel, this whole wave of, they called it chiclet in those days, lots of writers and lots of my friends, we all started writing books about our lives and what it was like to be in our late 20s and early 30s, sort of trying to get it together and get a job and find the guy and what it was like. And so it's a huge compliment.
Yeah, well, we love Bridget Jones as well, so it's definitely right up our street. And I think we started this podcast because we read Dolly Alderton's Ghosts, which I think is like, not quite the same as Bridget Jones in your book, but sort of a similar, like, you know, midlife, like, sort of fumbling around, like, different friends doing different things, that kind of thing. So, like, it's definitely a genre that we really enjoy. What sort of inspired you to write, first of all, the first book, but then we'll get on to the sequel in a moment?
I think I was really inspired. I remember thinking how I was talking to, like, my friends, and I remember thinking how life's just not how you imagined it was going to be when you were older. I was in my 40s. I was kind of in my mid to late 40s, and I think I was probably, like, doing the dishes one day and talking to friends, and all of us were saying how it's just not how we thought it was going to be. You kind of thought that you were going to reach a stage in your life where everything was sorted out, that you had figured everything out, you'd got all the answers, you'd got the lovely house and the husband and the kids and the money and the everything. And everybody I spoke to, whether they were single or not single, or they were mums or not mums, everybody felt that it just wasn't how they thought it was going to be. And everybody in some way felt like they were failing. And especially with social media, which we're going back about 5-6 years now, that really was kind of, Instagram was really kind of coming up at that point. And we were all looking at these perfect lives and comparing. And my life didn't look like anything that I saw. And everybody I knew said the same thing. And so I just wanted to create a character that sort of had this messy life that she just didn't recognize everywhere she looked around her. And I made her 40-something because there's kind of this magical number 40. Everybody thinks that everything's going to be sorted out by 40. You've got to have ticked all those boxes. But really, she could have been any age, to be honest, because I get messages from people of all ages, and they say they feel that pressure, you know, of in your 20s or any age to sort of have it all figured out. And I don't think anybody has it all figured out. And I even bring in a character, Cricket, who's in her 80s, and her life's not figured out. And that's just life.
Yeah.
And that's the theme that I carry on in more confessions, in that, you know, you sort of leave Nell at the end of the first book, and then we read the second book, and she's still trying to ask all the questions, and she's not really getting any of the answers. And life just keeps throwing all this stuff at you, because you fix one thing and something else happens. It's kind of like whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Why was it important to take Nell on this journey in the second book then? Because it's a continuation of the first one, and it is like whack-a-mole, and she's just about figured it out, and then her life takes on a new journey, a different course, is answering different questions. So why was it important for you to continue her story?
It was really important for me because I think in the first book, not to give a spoiler, but in the end of the first book, you kind of think Nell's kind of got it figured out.
Yeah.
And she's met the guy. And a lot of the films that we watch, they always finish, don't they, where the couple go off at the end of the movie into the sunset. And I wanted to show that actually that's not the end, that's the beginning.
Yeah.
And what happens once you have met someone? What happens once you have got a job that you like? You know, is everything perfect now? Is it plain sailing? Well, no, it's not. It's not plain sailing. Lots of stuff happens, you know, things keep happening and you've got to keep dealing with them. And so I really wanted to show that there is no magical land that you ever get to. And there's that famous saying, isn't there? It's not what is it? It's not the destination, it's the journey.
Yeah.
And she's just on this she's just on this journey, and she's just dealing with lots of stuff, and that it's and that life is difficult and life is complicated, but it's still brilliant. And it doesn't matter if you get things wrong and make mistakes, because life is you know, life is many shades. I there's a line I use, and I say it's not black and white, and it's not shades of grey. It's many colours of the rainbow, and rainbows are amazing. And that's how Nell is in this novel. And the same with her friends. You know, you see what happens to all her friends as well. Mm. And I open up after the pandemic, so we see what's happened to everybody during that time.
Yes, and actually, like, we were wondering, you know, how important was it for you to write that true to the time that it was in, obviously, because we're like a few, like a period of time on from the end of the first book, and obviously that's pandemic time. Like, did you make a conscious decision to write it as like a pandemic book, or was that, did that just sort of happen because that's where you were at in that moment?
I wanted it to be I wanted it to be after the pandemic. I didn't want to write about what it was like during it, and I didn't feel that I could ignore it. So I know some, I watched Succession, for example, I loved it, and they completely ignored the pandemic. They just kind of, you know, they just sort of acted as if it never happened. But because these books, I want them to feel like they're real, I just felt that I couldn't ignore that, but I didn't want to get bogged down into it. So I, right at the very beginning, I say it's happened, I make a few references, and then we just move on. And then we just carry on with the rest of the story.
Yeah, I actually found this stuff about cricket in the pandemic. I felt for cricket. I was like, so yeah, that was, quite interesting. And did you think, did you find it easy to write with that backdrop of the pandemic? Or did you, was, I know you said you didn't want to ignore what was actually happening, but like, I just, I think we're, it's one of the first books that I've read that was like actually fully referenced it. I've read a couple of books that's like it's the epilogue, or like it's like we're in 2023 kind of thing, but it's the first book that I've read that was like properly in 2020, well, end of 2020, 2021 kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wanted to give enough time between the end of the first book and the beginning of the second for things to have happened or not happened. So there was a period of time, and it picks up 18, I think it's 18 months after, or is it a year? Hang on. It's 18 months after. And the pandemic, in a way, you think Nell's going to do all this stuff at the end of the first novel. And then the pandemic comes along, and of course, everything gets cancelled. Nothing happens. You know, she's going to put on a play. She's going to do this. She's going to do that. Everything gets cancelled. And so, and it affected so many different people's lives, and it was very tough on many people's relationships. So then when we are kind of coming out and everything's coming back to normal and we're all meeting our friends again, it's like, okay, what has happened or what has not happened?
Yeah.
And it was just really interesting. It was really interesting because it put a lot of pressure on people's relationships. So then we could see what was happening to her friends. And also with cricket, you know, cricket was a widow, she's in her 80s, it was scary for her, she was lonely. And so then, you know, I kind of drew a line under it, and then it's, you know, it's Freedom Day.
Yeah.
She's just, it just feels like so weird to even talk about this stuff now. But, and then we just move on. And so once I kind of referenced it, I didn't want to then kind of talk about it much, because everyone's kind of sick of it, aren't they?
Yeah, it's like referencing it and then not getting bogged down in the detail of it. We've all lived it. We know what it looked like.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was, it was quite nice and light. But then you still had this, the small minute details in, like you said, about how it affected cricket, how it affected people working from home with their partners, which was kind of amusing as well. Like Fiona getting frustrated with him being in the house.
So is there another book? Are we allowed to ask that question?
Yeah,
will there be a third?
Well, there's definitely another book, a completely different novel that I'm writing right now, and I'm probably halfway through writing that. And that one will be out, gosh, I don't know. I've got to finish that by the end of this year. Hopefully it'll be out next year. But there's definitely more, hopefully, even more Confessions of a 40-something fuck-up. Because I could just, there's just so much more I could write about with Nell and Cricket and all her friends. I could just keep going and going and going. I meet people and they're like, are you going to do a Confessions of a 50-something fuck-up or a 60-something or a 70? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I could just go on forever. So if my publishers want more books and my readers want more books, I'm happy to write more. It's nice. Like hanging out with old friends.
So so there is a story for Nell and Edward and Cricket and everyone moving forward then. There are more stories you can tell us.
Absolutely, yeah. Forward. Yeah, no, definitely. I think, well, you know, it's like life, isn't it? I could keep going with these guys for a long time. They're like old friends. I like hanging out with them. It's fun.
Cricket for us was like, is a fantastic character. She is definitely our favourite. Will she make an appearance on the podcast? Because I know she has the column, and we're going to talk about the podcast actually a little bit more. But do you see her ever making an appearance on the podcast with
Nell? That's really interesting, because I think in the first novel, I think I say that Cricket has been a guest. I think mm-hmm. I might have referenced that. But definitely she could be a guest on the podcast. And I have often thought about actually doing transcripts of podcasts in the book. Uh-huh. Because some readers have said to me, you don't have enough about the podcast in there. You know, reference it and I talk about it, but I don't actually put podcast episodes in there. And often it's because a book has to be a certain length. And if I start putting podcasts, it will just, I mean, it's already at 500 pages. It's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So I have to kind of edit stuff down. But it's not that there's too much material. But I could literally do a whole book that's just the podcast interviews. You know, it could just be the podcast interviews, and it could be all her friends, all the people that she has on.
There you go. That's your next book.
I know. I mean, that's kind of a good idea, because there is so much more that I can do with this. And like you say, they have a column, the letters, they're so, I mean, making up those letters, I mean, it's, you know, I'm in hysterics.
Yeah. And also, I mean, even the obituaries she writes must be like,
yes.
You know, content.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, she does obituaries as well. And so I don't put those in the book. Again, I reference them, which is interesting. I don't know if you've seen the TV show that they adapted from the book, and they called it Not Dead Yet. And they focus on the obituaries. Mm. So the obituaries are the thing. You get a new obituary every episode. And not to give too much away, she sees the people that she's writing the obituaries about. Yeah. Which is a really interesting twist. And it's a really good way of having these life lessons, I think.
I quite enjoyed that. I watched like an episode or two before obviously meeting you. And I quite enjoyed that was the way they adapted the obituary, so that she's having these moments with these characters. It was really fun. I was like, this is a great twist. How much involvement did you have with the adaptation of the book to the show?
I didn't actually have any involvement at all. I sold the book. I met the writers. I went out to LA. I went to see them filming it. I went down to the studios. I met the actors. So it was really fantastic to like be sitting at Cricket has a wine bar. So it's really cool that you could be sitting at Cricket's wine bar. And I saw where Nell works and the office, and it's just great. But I somebody said to me that when you actually have something made from one of your books, whether it's a film or it's a TV show, that one of the most important things you can do is just to let it go. Yeah. Because if you want it to be a really faithful retelling of your book, you're going to be disappointed, because writers come in, and a TV show is really different to a book. The episodes are half an hour. And if you take out the adverts, I think it's like 24 minutes. So they have to write in a completely different way to how I write. And so once I'd let it go, I then just go along for the ride and I have as much fun as the viewers. And it's really fun seeing what they do with my characters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's kind of a real pinch me moment. I mean, my arms must be like black and blue from, you know, going on the set and seeing everybody. It was fantastic.
Wow.
I think once you give your art to the world, it doesn't become yours anyway. After that, it's how people interpret it, right? But I genuinely think this is just so excellently casted. Like, love Gina Rodriguez.
Yes,
yes, yeah. Love her.
So I just thought, yes, very well done.
It's a brilliant, brilliant cast. They've done season two now, which I've been watching on Hulu, and I think it will be on Disney Plus of the UK later this year. And it's, I'm not going to give it away, but they just do some brilliant things with the characters. And it's so funny. I mean, I laugh out loud at some of the episodes.
I love that.
It's great. It's really, really fun. I love it. And it's got that real feel-good feeling, which is what I always wanted people to have from my book. You know, I try and deal with, you know, some really hard-hitting topics, but ultimately I want people to come away and they feel uplifted and it's feel good.
It definitely does do that.
Yeah, you definitely do that. There's moments where maybe the situation is not light, but, you know, they're at a place, she's with Cricket and they're making their own coffin. And it's like, that's quite funny because it reminded me of the episode of Coronation Street where Deirdre's mum invites everyone to her wake to see who would turn up. It's just like the most absurd thing. But then in that moment you take the time to maybe just address something more deeper, so she has, or she maybe, and Nell more directly deals with like how she's feeling about her miscarriage and stuff like that. In those moments she has like maybe a deeper thought or deeper awakening, and I kind of liked that those elements were weaved into the story like that. But then also there were some very lull moments in the book as well, so like Annabelle, of course, being a life coach, and it's of course the most annoying person in the room that happens to be a life coach, and I clipped it and was like lol when I saw it there and when I heard it when I was listening on audio. But yeah, there's very lull moments.
Annabelle is she's one of the best characters to write. People, I get messages from people saying, she's so annoying. And I say, I know. And she's just wonderful. I have so much fun with her. Yeah. I put her in situations and I get her to say things. And she gives such fantastic backhanded compliments.
I was like, everyone knows an Annabelle. And then you sit there and you question how you could be friends with Fiona, who's also friends with Annabelle. Because how could she like both of you when you're so different? Exactly that. And I'm like, oh, Annabelle. But then also like, it was really funny to read her character.
I know. When I had the idea of making her a life coach, I did laugh out loud at some of the stuff that she says. Because like you say, it's kind of like the most annoying person is become a life coach.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, they're in yurts, and of course she puts herself in the really high-end hotel down the road. Those kind of moments, it was just brilliant.
Yes.
She was one of my favourite characters, actually, just because everyone knows an Annabelle, don't they?
Yeah, she's so much fun. Annabelle's great because you can get her to say just the most awful things. Which, you know, obviously Nell's nice and all the rest of her friends are nice and they're all very thoughtful, but Annabelle can just come in and just, she's kind of really brutal, but she always does it in a sort of way as if she's being complimentary.
Yeah. But I know people, I literally can picture someone that I know that's exactly like that.
Well, I think everybody knows somebody like that.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so we were going to ask you what your favourite character was to write, but that's obviously Annabelle.
I think it's probably, well, Cricket. I love Cricket. I love writing Cricket. She's a lot of fun. I do love Nell. I mean, they're all fun. Annabelle's really good fun. Edward, cracks me up. He's hilarious with his spreadsheets.
I love that.
Yeah, so everybody has what's quite nice when you have this ensemble cast is that you can pick and choose who you want to hang out with that day. You know, if you're writing a scene, it's like, who do I want to hang out with? So everyone's got their good bits and their bad bits. But I think writing a mean character is fun because it's not something I often do.
Yeah. How do you find it juggling that many characters and then making sure that everyone gets their time?
Okay, so that's quite that comes in the plotting stage. So when I plot out the book, I spend quite a long time plotting it out, and every character has a different coloured post-it note, and I have a huge board on the wall of my office / spare bedroom.
Yeah.
And so when you put all the scenes and I pin them all up and I have a different colour for each character, you can stand back and you can look and you can see that, oh, it might be a little bit too pink heavy. Well, Cricket's pink. I need a little bit more yellow, and, you know, Annabelle's yellow. And so you can move stuff around to make sure that everybody has their fair share and everybody has enough scenes. And it's literally ticking them off on your fingers to make sure everybody's got some airtime. Suppose it must be like if you're writing for a soap or something. It's like every character's got to have their own storyline going on.
I would watch this as a soap, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to be fair, I'd also read a whole book just of Cricket.
Do you know, I have people say that. I have people say, and I've actually thought, shall I write a novel that's all Cricket, that's from Cricket's point of view, or from Cricket when she was younger, or, I mean, because Cricket's such a fantastic character. But there's only so many hours in a day, and there's only so many books I can write. So it's picking one and going, okay, I'm going to, because it takes a year to write a novel.
Wow. Yeah, I'd say some people longer. You're quite quick.
Yeah. 14's an incredible amount to have as well, to have written. So that's kudos to you for having.
Thank you.
Such an extensive library. Go check it out, everybody, for sure. Is there any, just to your other books, are there any that were your particular favourites to write, or you found more challenging than others?
I think a lot of the, I think your first novel is always really good fun to write because you have never written a novel before. So you have all this stuff that you want to say. And so the first book is really good fun. And then the second book is really hard because you're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to follow up the second book? And then I used to write, they call them high concept romantic comedies. So they were always, they were kind of romantic comedies with a bit of a magical twist. So I would do, I did time travel in one, a couple of them, actually. One of them, Imagine If You Met Your Younger Self, which I still love that idea. Imagine if you bumped into your 21-year-old self, you got to hang out with each other. What would you tell her? What life lessons? And the irony is that you kind of think you know it all, but actually it's the younger self that teaches you how to live life again. Because when you're younger, you're kind of living in the moment.
Yeah.
So I wrote a lot of stuff like that, but so, you know, some of them are really kind of old now. We need to update them. I think that's the plan, to update them and republish them, because even though the stories are, I think the stories are still really good. You know, some are 25 years old. One of my first ones, nearly 25 years old. So it's almost like reading, I don't know, Pride and Prejudice. How old's that? 100 and some years.
Haven't you got Mr. Darcy
book? Yes, I did. Me and Mr. Darcy. I bet. Imagine dating Mr. Darcy.
Oh, that's good. What is your favourite, one of your favourite books? Obviously, you can't pick one. No one can pick one, but.
The books that I've read, or the books that I've written?
Both. How about both?
Okay, so the books that I have written, it's always the last book.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's always the last book that you've written. So it would have to be more Confessions of a 40-something fuck-up, because that's the last book that you wrote, that I've written. And then I would say one of the most favourite books that I have ever read. Wow, that's a tough one.
We won't hold you to it if you change your mind.
Gosh, that is a tough one. One of the most favourite books that I've ever read. What have I really, really... Oh, Lessons in Chemistry.
Oh, cool.
Lessons in Chemistry. I mean, there's been books that I read years ago when I was a lot younger that had a real impact on me. But in recent years, a book that I've really enjoyed and just couldn't wait to get into bed and read it, I would say Lessons in Chemistry. I just got so invested in those characters. They became real people to me.
Hmm.
And 6:30, the dog.
What a name
I loved
dog,
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. And are you reading or watching anything at the moment that you want to tell us about?
I just watched Scoop.
Ooh, what's that?
Which my God, I've got to watch that.
It's the Prince Andrew interview.
Oh.
And it has Billy Piper and Gillian Anderson, and Rufus Sewell plays Prince Andrew, and he's wearing prosthetics. And he is so like him. It's so I watched that I think last night or the night before, and it's so good. It's you cringe. It's so good. So realistic. So that was really good. And something that I watched that I would recommend anybody watched was Ted Lasso.
I love Ted Lasso.
I don't know if you watched that. Because I wasn't gonna watch it for a long time because it was about it was about football, and I have absolutely no interest in football. But actually, that's completely secondary, isn't it, to the show? And it was such a feel good show, and it's filmed just really close to where I live, in Richmond. So I loved Ted Lasso. I was really sad when I finished the third season. And then the book that I have just read was The Salt Path. I don't know if you've heard of that book. It was
is that the one where they walk along the
Yes. They walk it's about, well, basically I find it very difficult to read fiction when I'm writing a novel. Because I'm trying to create this imaginary world, so I struggle going into someone else's imaginary world. So I like to read nonfiction, and I kind of read about this book, The Salt Path, and it came out a few years ago now. And it's about a couple, and they lose everything, and they don't know what to do. So they decide to walk the path that goes around the coast, you know, Devon, Cornwall, Dorset, 630 miles. And they just have their backpacks and a tent, and they wild camp. And I loved it. I just finished it last night, and it was just a book about when you just lose everything, which is kind of similar to Confessions in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you lose everything and you've got to start over. And it's, what do you do? And that's what happens in this book. And I loved it. And so I'd really recommend that one. The Salt Path.
I've had it on my list for ages, but I haven't read it. So yeah, I'll bump it up.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And it's really inspiring, I thought.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. We've really enjoyed chatting to you.
Thank you for inviting me.
You are welcome. And we'll let you know when it's going to go live, and everybody should read the book. Or maybe listen to it, because I enjoyed that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe and share with your friends, and we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.